Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rent-a-warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. Marty the Red texts in, do you guys think that signing Besser at a proper ticket is important for management to keep up appearances that this is still a place where players want to play, considering the recent, quote, get me out of here drama? That's an interesting question from Marty, because I do think there's something to be said for just the overall goal of like stability and quietness and, you know, just, hey, we're not on the front page of the NHL, right? Like, that would be a great place for the Canucks to get to. You don't do that, though, by that can't enter into your analysis of whether or not you should sign Brock Besser, especially because I think if it does end up, if, you know, them trading him, it's not as if it's Besser spurning the team and saying, man, I really don't want to stay here. It's the team proactively deciding to move on. So I think I see what Marty's saying. I think everyone would agree there has been way too much noise and drama around the Canucks, and you would love to have its reputation change to one where, hey, that's a really stable, high-functioning organization. Go there and don't have to worry about that stuff. I don't think what they do with Brock Besser is affecting that one way or the other, though.
No, the truth is that Brock Besser, I think, is very open-minded yes. about staying in Vancouver. So I actually think that's a meaningful data point that despite the noise, despite some of what's occurred, you know, not that he's going to take a sweetheart hometown discount necessarily. I mean, unrestricted free agent opportunities don't come around very often for players like Brock Besser. You have to spend a long time, you know, working through restricted situations to gain this type of leverage. And these careers aren't long, right? So this opportunity looms large for him and his representatives, as it should. He's earned this opportunity. But, everything I've heard throughout this process is that Besser's very open to remaining in Vancouver and has generally liked it here. And I think that matters given, like, that's an important thing for us to note as we begin any discussion that sort of touches on this. You know, there are some rumblings, obviously, within the league. Like, one thing that, you know, you're beginning to hear a little bit in conversations with people around the league is, you know, the Canucks have now signed a lot of, you know, whether it's Mikheyev or Lazar or Vinny Desharnais or Danton Heinen, right? There have been a lot of multi-year commitments made to unrestricted free agents in sort of, you know, a tier lower than the superstar level, where the player has, you know, come to Vancouver expecting to have found a long-term fit. And then pretty quickly, you know, in some cases less than a full season, in some cases halfway through a deal, what have you, been dispatched to, you know, discarded, traded. Now, look, the truth is that the NHL might have fully guaranteed contracts, but it doesn't have fully guaranteed roles, right? And I think you'd say basically to a man, I guess you could, by the way, you could add Kuzmenko to this.
Yes.
Too. You know, I'd say, like, basically if you come here and pew suitor it, right, and play well, that's not going to happen to you. But, you know, I do think that's a factor, something that people are wondering about is does that sort of cause any complications as the Canucks look to do their, you know, value hunting in unrestricted free agency this summer? And I could see that being a small factor, but the truth is that there's only so many jobs to go around. There's only so many roles to go around. And fundamentally, most of these agreements come down to money more than anything else. Like, well, that's always going to be the biggest factor.
Yeah, and especially with the value hunting guys, right? Like, their value yeah. because they've already been passed over by a bunch of teams. You know what I mean? So they're, by definition, yes. they're not in a position to, like, I'm going to be really picky here about where I go. It's like, no, that's how you get up in the bargain category, right? Is because you've already right. been kind of passed over.
Well, and for every story, you know, I listed five names, Kuzmenko, whatever, yep. Desharnais, Heinen, etc. For every one of those guys, you have a Lankinen story where
yes.
signing in Vancouver worked out, guy built his value to a certain point, and then the club extended him. Or Pugh Suter, right, who was a late August signing, right, came to Vancouver, I mean, he's going to do very well on his next contract. I don't think he's going to be waiting around till the latter stages of the summer this year when signing his new contract, whether it's in Vancouver or elsewhere. So, you know, those success stories matter too. Bluger would be another one, right? Bluger signs on July 1 and did pretty well. Ian Cole's value held. I guess Soucy would be the other relevant data point here, right? Especially because he was withdrawn from the lineup again after the club was hopeful that he'd been making some progress after the loss in Vegas. So that would be the other sort of meaningful one that we'd look at and say, hey, he could be another name that gets added to this list of free agent signings that haven't worked out, multi-year commitment in which the player ultimately doesn't end their tenure with the Canucks, or end that contract anyway with the Canucks, given sort of the Rutherford and Alvin habit of rearranging things pretty quickly, especially when they're not working.
Yeah, what did you make of the Soucy scratch? And it'll be interesting to see when they hit the ice at practice, you know, where he's lined up. Was it purely, in your eyes, performance-based after the result in Vegas? Yeah.
Yes, 100%. That's not me guessing or reading between the lines. It was performance based.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think, like, I think lack of fire based, which is, you know, another sort of thing that we gotta monitor here. Like, it's not like there was a mistake or puck management errors. Like, I literally think it came down to the coaching staff feeling like they needed more fire in a physical game than what he provided.
That's tough, because that's what I brought it up. Is like, I don't really remember like the one, you know, the kind of smoking gun turnover or missed assignment or anything like that, right? That sometimes gets a defenseman yanked from the lineup. I mean, we all know how, like, what Tocchet and Foote want from their defensemen. And once those questions start to creep in, I know, as you said, like, they were hopeful maybe his play had turned a corner. He was rounding back into form. And, you know, Soucy, like, he's never going to be an enforcer out there, but he's a big guy. He can be physical. He can have that element to his game. That's going to be pretty important here. And I think especially with Elias Pettersson coming into the lineup and really establishing that specifically as a calling card. Now with the coaching staff has that option to go with, I think it makes the competition for minutes for guys like Soucy and Forbort a lot more difficult. I mean, DPD was getting minutes with Phil Pronick, right, over the weekend. Like, there's obviously a big appetite to see what he can do in an increased role. That's got to be a pretty big wake-up call for Carson Soucy, though, to come out of the lineup that quickly out of the Four Nations break. And I'm sure he'll get another chance here in a hurry. But, you know, all of a sudden, we went from, oh, they're looking to trade Carson Soucy. Oh, maybe not so much. And now with this scratch, as we look ahead to the deadline next week, it feels potentially real again that they could be looking to move Soucy before the deadline.
Yeah. Certainly, I don't think they ever really stopped considering it. You look at sort of the cap situation with Lankin and Dunn and reallocating $3.25 million up to the forward group. I mean, that just makes sense with how this team's positioned at the moment. But, you know, I do think that the team remains high on the player generally, right? And so as a result, you know, I don't think there was the same level of urgency before this weekend. But, you know, I honestly, where he takes line rushes in the next 20 minutes will probably tell us a lot, because, you know, if he's not back in the lineup here, then that's a very different conversation, right?
Then we're really on like imminent Carson Soucy trade watch. You know what I mean? If he's like all of a sudden kind of semi-permanently on the outside, I don't mean like imminent today, but I mean like before the deadline, it's like, oh, that's something we should be very, very aware of.
Yeah, no, I think we have to be. So we'll know more in the next 5 to 10 minutes. The skaters just took the ice here at the Toyota Performance Center. I don't have eyes on the ice at the moment.
We'll work through logistically. We'll let you fix that, Drance, okay? Eyes on practice, gather all the intel you can.
And then I'll come back and tell you about it.
Yes, exactly. And then you can come up. This is like real reporting. Go get the information, then come tell us about it. So Drance is going to go do that. I'll be by myself here for the next 10 minutes or so to wrap up this segment. We'll try to juggle the schedule a little bit here with Adam Kierzenblatt from the Hockey News. We'll try to get him on at 1:30 so Drancer can hop back on at 1 and give us the update from practice in LA. But as he said there, for the Carson Soucy scratch to be result, not just, it was performance. You know, there's no rest or rotation or anything going on here. This is performance based, and specifically, like, hey, man, we need you to be engaged. And you feel for Carson Soucy because he signed here, 3-year deal, Western Canada, all that, wanted to be here, no trade clause, and then your name's out there. Yeah, I can imagine that's a little bit difficult to focus. That's also part of the job. So that's a tough situation for Carson Soucy, and we'll see where he lines up at practice today and if he gets another shot at it against the Kings. But as I was saying on the show yesterday to Landon as well, they all of a sudden just have so many more options, so many more credible NHL options to work with on the blue line. And this is without Quinn Hughes healthy right now. But with the addition of Marcus Pettersson and Victor Mancini, the emergence of Elias Pettersson, you've got different looks you can throw out there. You've got different configurations you can try. You don't need to be so reliant on the same six dudes over and over again. And that's a great thing to have for the team, but it does put a guy like Carson Soucy in a difficult position. This text comes in. If anyone should be yanked right now, it's probably Myers, but I know they can't do that. I know Tyler Myers had a wild, certainly that game against Vegas. You still can't take him out of the lineup as a right shot guy. The minutes that he can play, I know we're, what are we in, like year six of the Tyler Myers experience in Vancouver now, and it's all, everyone always thinks he should be healthy scratched or he should be bumped down the lineup, and what happens? Whether it's Travis Green or Bruce Boudreau or Rick Tocchet, he ends up playing 20 minutes. And I know sometimes it looks infuriating, sometimes it makes you want to pull your hair out, and there's the chaos draft and all that, I get it, and you're not wrong to think that. But there's a reason he never, ever, ever finds himself out of the lineup or in a minor role for too long. He does a lot that coaches value, and I'm not expecting to see him come out of the lineup anytime soon, even with the additional options the Canucks have on the blue line right now. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Tony texts in, I like Brock Besser, but why are we talking $7 million by 8 years when the Athletic and Dom's model has his market value at $5.5 million. Who's right? That's from Tony. Well, I'll say a couple things about that, Tony. I mean, first of all, a model and a tool like Dom's model is just that. It's a tool. It's not perfect. He would be the first to admit that. It doesn't give you an absolute 100% take it to the bank snapshot of a player's value. And first of all, I think Brock Besser's value there is more like 6.6, like right around his salary, basically. He's making basically breaking even. So you factor in the cap going up with that. You can look at it and say, okay, $8 million. But also inherently, what you do when you buy unrestricted years from a player is you pay them more than market value. That's kind of the name of the game. That's why free agency is so dangerous for teams. That's why so many of the big mistakes that teams make happen in free agency. Because once a player gets that leverage, once they're all the teams are competing on the open market for their services, the number can get pretty out of control in a hurry. So it's not a question of, you know, oh, well, this model says he's worth six, but he's going to make eight. Who's right? Guys get more than their quote unquote market value all the time on the open market. Guys get more than whatever model says they should be paid on the open market all the time, because that's what it costs to win the bidding in free agency. That doesn't mean you should never wade into free agency, that you should never be willing to take those risks like that. But you just have to assess where your team is. And again, I think if the Canucks were not even just having a repeat of last year, but, you know, on pace for 100 points, and hey, they're going to be third in their division, I think it's a much easier decision to re-sign Brock Besser. You still think, okay, with a couple of tweaks, we can push to a contending team. We need Brock Besser in the lineup to do that. He's too difficult to replace. I think it becomes a much easier decision given where the team is and how weird a season it's been and the question marks around Elias Pettersson, the question marks about Thatcher Demko. And I think just the overall uncertainty about getting back to being a contender in the short term here. Again, not saying there's no way you sign Besser, not saying that there's, you know, well, you know, must trade. Yeah, there are deals. I think there would be deals that work for both sides, but you have to stay very disciplined. You can't fudge it, and I don't think there's any way you can treat him as your own rental past the deadline for this year. 650-650, again, is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, and you can send your thoughts in now. What do you want to see Rick Tocchet try differently at practice today? How do you want to see him juggle the lines? And again, I'm of two minds of this, as I said earlier in the show, because I love talking line combinations. I'm also just kind of deeply skeptical that there is that perfect line combination or set of lines that's going to all of a sudden dramatically change how we look at the Canucks offense. Now, no one's expecting them to all of a sudden be an elite team because you move some pieces around here or there. But can they get closer to average rather than bottom of the league? Can they get closer to, slightly below average as opposed to bottom of the league? That's really the question that we're talking about here. And even that, I read the text from Reg earlier. It's like, well, as long as you have this version of Elias Pettersson, I don't know if you can be a slightly below average offensive team. It's really hard to do if your top two centers are, 55-point Elias Pettersson and Filip Hedl. That's one of the weakest top six center combinations in the NHL. And last I checked, center is pretty important to what your forward group is doing to helping you score goals. So, Hoglander should be moved up. Try to get a spark. Connor Garland probably should be moved up. Neither of those players, as much as I like them individually, are compensating for the extreme lack of options down the middle offensively that Rick Tocchet has at his disposal right now. So it's kind of a catch-22 situation for Rick Tocchet. You got to try something. Can't just roll it out as is. That's not acceptable. You're the coach. It's your job to always be looking for solutions, to always be trying to find the next iteration. But you also know, you are not really playing with a full deck right now for the Vancouver Canucks at forward when it comes to putting everything together. 650-650 again is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Mark from Campbell River says, I would love to see Petey with Hoglander and Lekker-Mäki. And that is probably, if we're talking about just things the organization can do, and this isn't strictly a Rick Tocchet decision, although I'm sure he'd be consulted, I do wonder, if you're just trying to, how can we, what forward group available to us is going to give us the best chance to score goals? It probably includes Jonathan Lekker-Mäki at this point. We saw him earlier in the year, some nice moments, didn't make a massive impact in terms of production, 2 goals, 3 points in 11 games. He continues to dominate at the American League level with 18 goals, and yes, only 8 assists, but 18 goals in 30 games for the Abbotsford Canucks. And I think the key for me with bringing Lekker-Mäki up, we'll see, I don't think it's going to happen for tomorrow's game, but by the time the team gets back home, maybe to the tail end of this road trip, do we see him? You're not just bringing him up to kind of throw a Hail Mary to save your season. You're also gathering information that can help you build your team for next year. You're giving him some extra reps at the NHL level, allowing him to get more familiar with playing at this level, with what the coaching staff is going to demand of him, all of those things. You're setting him up for success next year, and you're probably giving your team a shot in the arm as well. I think we've all noticed just how noticeable Filip Hedl and what he can do, his skill set, his ability to carry the puck through the neutral zone, to make plays at speed, his handles, his skill, his speed, all of that, how noticeable it is, because it's something the Canucks almost completely lack other than him on the roster. And Lekker-Mäki is not at that level, but again, he's a guy who can do some things with the puck, obviously has an incredible shot. He can make plays off the rush. He brings that element of dynamic attacking ability that is so absent on this roster. I'm not saying he's the best replacement. I'm not saying pencil him in for 20 plus next year or anything like that, or that he's going to solve this team's offensive woes. But if you're looking for solutions, in-house solutions, that doesn't involve going and, trading a second round pick or something like that for a veteran winger to come in and try to juice your offense, in-house solutions, to me, bringing Lekker-Mäki up and plugging him in, that's got higher upside than moving Nils Hoglander up the lineup, because that ultimately is shuffling deck chairs. With the 12 or 13 healthy forwards they have available right now, I'm not sure how many configurations there are that would really excite me. And again, Lekker-Mäki is not going to revolutionize what this team is doing offensively just by virtue of coming up and getting into the lineup. But if you're looking for the highest upside button to push right now for the Canucks offense, I think it's got to involve bringing Lekker-Mäki up from the AHL and seeing, again, what he can do at the NHL level. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can You can send your thoughts and comments in now. This one says, I want Pettersson traded now. I've been avid not to trade him this whole time, but I'm tired of hearing his name in negative light on the radio, and I just want it to stop. I don't know what you want us to say. I'm not even, like, questioning his character. I'm just saying he's not producing right now. What do you want me to say? You want me to pretend like he's on pace for 100 points? He's not. And it's a big problem for the team. It's a massive, massive problem for the team. And yes, we cannot have the what do the Canucks do to boost their offense, to score more. We can't have that conversation without acknowledging what's going on with Elias Pettersson. It's just impossible to do. He is a huge, massive part of the story. Cam at the farm says, I say play the wheels off of Petey, double shift him and maximize his minutes until the deadline or beyond. Live and die with the results. Force management to move the club and roster forward accordingly. That's Cam at the farm. It's an interesting thought, honestly. Just play the guy a million times. Or like a million minutes a game, as much as you can. And I do wonder how, like, you're stuck in between there a little bit, right? If you think it's a physical thing, is that making it better? No. But if you think it's primarily a mental thing, get him as many minutes as possible, and does that make it more difficult to overthink while he's out there? I don't mind the idea. I will say, though, I'm also kind of out on the do this to get Pettersson going conversation. Whatever is going to change with Elias Pettersson, if it is going to change, to snap out of this, it's going to start with him. It's not going to be, oh, he got put with different line mates. It's not going to be, well, they started deploying him differently. Yeah, are there things the Canucks and the team can do to support him? Sure. And put him in positions to succeed? Of course there are. That's something you got to do with all your players, especially your best players. But I think if we're eventually sitting here and talking about, you know, the Elias Pettersson renaissance and what the turning point was, I think it's going to be an internal thing from Elias Pettersson, not anything that Rick Tocchet did, not anything that his teammates did, nothing like that. It's going to come from within for Elias Pettersson. I hope it does. That would be great. That would be a lot more fun getting back to watching that version of Elias Pettersson than the version we've been watching for the last 12 months. 650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This text comes in. What do you think of the weird split power play units we've been getting? Trying to get two mediocre units instead of one possibly good and one certainly bad. Yeah, I would put your best guys. Put your best forwards and Filip Hronek on one unit. The split not working for me. I'm not a big two power play units guy, even when all your guys are healthy and you have a lot of talent. I'm always more in favor of just load one unit up, give them 90 seconds at least of every power play. Those are your best players. Let them cook. Even with Quinn Hughes out of a lineup, that should still be the course for the Canucks. So Pettersson, Hedl, Besser, DeBrusk probably at forward, and Filip Hronek, put them all together. Let's see what they can do as a power play unit, because we know goals are going to be hard to come by at 5-on-5. All right. Keep your texts coming in. Drancer is right now watching Canucks practice, and he'll hop back on in the next segment to tell us all about it. Can't find the latest episode of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at rogers.com. More Canucks talk next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. Drance back on the show in just a minute here. He hustled out from his cavernous room in the LA Kings practice facility to see what the Canucks are doing on ice at practice. So we'll get the full update, the full report from Thomas Drance in a second. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And before we get Drance on, even, we can give you the update, at least how the Canucks lined up their forward unit in practice in LA today. So this is courtesy, fresh off the presses, from Thomas Drance, who's down covering it there. So it was Elias Pettersson with Jake DeBrusque and Nils Höglander, who does, in fact, get moved up into not just a top six, but a first line role at practice today. Filip Hedl between Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland. That's very interesting as well. Pius Suter between Drew O'Connor and Brock Besser on the third line. And then Bluger, Baines, and Kiefer Sherwood make up your fourth line. So, as expected, very significant shuffling from Rick Tocchet and the Canucks coaching staff at practice today. Obviously, some of the highlights: Höglander moving all the way up to the first line, Kiefer Sherwood moving all the way down to the fourth line. And we can talk about those switches in a second. You know, Brock Besser with Pius Suter, that's a new combination we haven't seen much of. I also find Filip Hedl with Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland really interesting. And I know we get texts a lot from people asking, you know, hey, what? Why not try Bluger and Joshua and Garland, the unit that was so effective last year for the Canucks, and even just the duo of Garland and Joshua, right? Because once they got Elias Lindholm and ended up moving him to center on the stretch drive and then into the playoffs, it was Lindholm with Joshua and Garland. So that duo of Garland and Joshua, no matter who they were playing, who their center was very, very effective, to the point where coming into this season, once they signed Jake DeBrusque, we were kind of looking at the Canucks forward group as, okay, they've got the Miller-Besser duo, the Pettersson-DeBrusque duo, and the Garland-Joshua duo, and then you move the pieces around there. Now, obviously, in large part because of health and the cancer diagnosis and treatment for Dakota Joshua, which is a massive, massive deal, he hasn't been in the lineup that much. He hasn't been productive when he has been in the lineup, so Teddy Bluger hasn't been that productive. There's been a lot of reasons why those two players haven't spent that much time together, but you also know that they can work really well together. And with some of the jump and the juice that Filip Hedl has shown since he's arrived in a Canucks uniform, I like that idea of, all right, getting Garland and Joshua together with somebody who has, frankly, way more attacking ability than any of the other forwards they've played with, whether it's been Pius Suter, Teddy Bluger, or Elias Lindholm. I think Drance, we'll try to get Drance back on the line here in just a second. We'll get Drance back on the line here in just a second. But again, it's Filip Hedl with Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua. And then Nils Höglander gets the chance. Drance, I can hear you. I don't know
if you can hear me. Oh, perfect. Great. Excellent. Sorry. I thought sometimes I like wait in this side room basically and like test my audio levels before I start. So I guess I was just like yelling 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1 into the mic on air.
No. We just heard the very end of it. Don't worry. We didn't get the countdown. That would have been very exciting.
So an interesting start to Canucks practice. Obviously, Quinn Hughes watch is my priority today. So as the Canucks began practice and began their first drill, Quinn Hughes was not present with the group. So that was obviously notable, and I sent a tweet saying so. Hughes, however, joined the group about midway through the first drill and then didn't participate. Went down to the same end of the rink as the goaltenders as his teammates went through their paces and looked to be warming up. You know, at that point I was thinking, okay, maybe he's a limited participant, but from that point on, he participated in every drill. So what it would look like to me is that Quinn Hughes is a full participant who was simply a bit late getting on the ice and spent the first drill warming up. So that's the good news. Quinn Hughes expected to be in the lineup tomorrow, I think, generally speaking, although obviously it would be more like a probable thing than an yep. in thing. We'll see what Rick Tocchet says afterwards. A good sign for that remains on track or in progress, given that he is, I would describe him as a full participant at Canucks practice in Los Angeles. I'm sure you were already getting to the lines that I tweeted out.
Yes.
So Susie Mancini and then Elias Pettersson and Forbert were sort of the bottom six pairs. I didn't see line rushes. They were doing drills, but it was Susie Mancini who were on the ice as like what I would describe as the third pair, given that they're forward group for sort of like a scrimmage drill that revealed or a scrimmage like drill that revealed the full lineup. That would to me suggest, although again, I didn't see it in line rushes where you can really get a sense of the, like the hierarchical order of things, but that would suggest to me that they're the third pair and that Elias Pettersson and Derek Forbert are the third pair. So that's
the fourth pair,
the extra two. So that would seem to be good news for Carson Soucy in the context of our discussion, you know, in the last segment before I ran to watch 25 minutes of Canucks practice and get this lineup intel and feed the Vancouver beast.
Yes.
Given how few people like me are on the road these days. I think when you look at the Canucks forward lines generally and sort of the new look that Rick Tocchet has given them, you know, the main thing is Höglander had to move up. They just don't have enough answers at this moment for Höglander to not play in the top nine in some capacity.
Yeah.
Like he couldn't stay on the fourth line. So I think in checking that box, you know, I think you could quibble with other things, but you really are quibbling as opposed to having substantive criticisms. I think leaving Höglander out of the top nine would have been an error or something we could reasonably describe as an error, given how little this team has generated. So Rick Tocchet playing DeBrusk with Pettersson and Höglander, I think that checks the most important box that I think reasonable analysts, Canucks fans, interested parties would have wanted to see today. Hedel with Garland and Joshua is fascinating.
Yeah, that's the one I was keying in on too just before we got you back, right? Because it's we hear so often on the show in the inbox like, hey, why aren't Garland and Joshua playing together? Even, you know, Garland, Blueger, Joshua, and there were such high hopes for that duo of Garland and Joshua coming into the season. And obviously there's been very understandable extenuating circumstances with Dakota Joshua. So this is not to like bash them and oh, why hasn't it worked or anything, but it's interesting to see them reunited and with a center in Philip Hedel, who really none of the three centers they played with last year, like he brings something different than all of them, you know what I mean, than Pius Suter and Teddy Blueger and then Elias Lindholm in terms of his ability to carry the puck and make plays. That's a very, very interesting combination from Rick Tocchet for me.
I agree, it's the most offensive juice of any pivot that we've seen regularly play with Garland and Joshua, and I'd include Elias Lindholm in that, right? Because I think what Hedel can do flipping the ice in transition, carrying the puck, is degrees greater than what you're getting from Lindholm at this stage of his career, or even what the Canucks got from him at last season, right? Lindholm's more of a work away from the puck, find open ice type offensive complementary player, as opposed to a player like Hedel, who, you know, we've seen it. He can drive. He can drive through the neutral zone. He's probably Vancouver's most dynamic forward in transition. So a very different look for that line than any of the centers that we've seen cycle through and play with the Garland-Joshua duo in the past. The Besser, Pius Suter, Drew O'Connor line, I find that pretty fascinating here. I wonder if that's going to be a tough minutes line tomorrow at crypto.com arena. You know, Suter obviously is a pretty special defensive presence. I think he's a little bit more special on the wing than he is at center, but we've seen Tocchet utilize him in toughs since the JT Miller trade. Besser, we know, earns trust, right? Probably at a level that Höglander and Garland, you know, Garland has trust. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's number one in this on this team in 5-on-5 ice time, but because of the size and because of the nature of the opponent in you know, a big burly Los Angeles Kings team that likes to play grind it down hockey, right? You know, Besser, I think, is the option that I'd expect the Canucks to want on the ice with, you know, Kempe and Kopitar and company when they jump over the boards. Drew O'Connor brings some speed to that line, so that makes sense. You know, just in terms of the size profile of the players on the wall on that line, and then Pius Suter's sort of defensive calibration, that to me, like, I bet that's the line that Rick Tocchet's planning to use against the top of the Kings lineup, and that's sort of how I interpret what this looks like, even though they took You know, and by the way, I sort of ordered it again. This wasn't line rushes. So it looks like Besser's on the third line. But in fact, there's six players in blue jerseys, which I would tend to call the top six, and six players in white jerseys that I would tend to call the bottom six. And it was the Hedel line and the Suter line in top six blue, and the Pettersson line and the Bluger line in what I would call bottom six white. Obviously not quite that simple. We'll see how they actually order it when they take rushes in the warm-up skate or at morning skate tomorrow if they do so. So don't read too much into how I've ordered it if you are checking Twitter. Like, this isn't Besser on the third line. I think that's a misreading of what I saw anyway. Well, I just wanted to offer that clarification.
I think even with this forward group right now, even if they had skated in order and it was this order, really what it depends on how much ice time they get. You know what I mean? Like, even then I wouldn't be like, well, he's a third line. Brock Besser's playing on the third line, because you could easily see that line end up playing the most 5-on-5 minutes of any of those units going into tomorrow's game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's going to be a massive gap in usage and deployment, or maybe in deployment, but in minutes, in total minutes at 5-on-5 for any of those three lines. Like they're just not built with a clear cut top six and a clear cut third line right now. That's not how the forward group is built. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind here. And again, we'll see how the minutes shake out to really slot these lines into different places tomorrow against the LA Kings. On the blue line, so Hughes, what you would describe as a full participant, obviously really good news, not a confirmation that he'll play, but really good news for his availability tomorrow, paired in his familiar spot with Philip Pronick. You have Marcus Pettersson and Tyler Myers. And then, as you said, Soucy and Mancini looking like the third pair. What did you think of Victor Mancini's debut for the Canucks against Utah on the weekend?
Yeah, I liked it. I really liked it, actually. I thought his mobility played. I thought he was quiet in a good way for a third pair defenseman. But I also thought there were moments where he activated a bit.
Yeah,
held the puck down low during a partial change on one sequence. Looked to add some motion when the Canucks were attacking, you know, stationary in the offensive zone. So I liked that part of his game. Talked to him after the game, actually, and asked him a little bit about it. And, you know, he was basically pretty critical of his performance. And I was like, dude, what are you talking about? You were great. Like, you were fine. And he was like, look, that's how I approach this game. I have really high standards for myself. That's how I have to be to have success. So I appreciated that. Like, that was, I thought, obviously the first time I've met him, to be totally honest with you, but I was pretty struck by that. You know, he was like, there's some things I need to clean up, right? He was mostly critical of his performance. And I was like, man, I thought you had a pretty quiet game. Defensively sharp, you weren't on the ice for a goal against. Like, what's going on here? And, you know, that's, he effectively was saying, I need to watch the tape, but I'm pretty demanding. I have pretty exacting standards for myself. So I thought that was certainly made a good first impression on me, to be totally honest with you, Jamie. I liked hearing it.
You love to hear it. I think
that's a sign of self-confidence, and I think a sign of awareness, right? Like, this is a fifth-round pick. This is a guy who, you know, has, since he's come into to pro hockey anyway, has been like a classic training camp striver, right? Broke camp with the Rangers unexpectedly in one of his first NHL training camps, has obviously had success in the American League, has kind of built himself into being a lot more than the pedigree would indicate. And I think that mentality, that approach, that sort of way of thinking about how to be successful, I think that gives you an insight, or at least I think it gives us some insight into how this guy has managed to sort of keep beating the odds in terms of getting opportunities and building value as a commodity in this league. So I liked his game a lot. I'm not surprised that he's staying in. I think the skating is maybe a more notable attribute than his size, to be totally honest with you, which I had heard, right? I'd heard that there was, you know, more four-way mobility perhaps than the profile or the scoring stats would indicate, that he could do a little bit more than just be a stay-at-home guy. I thought we saw that in his first performance, and I thought he played simple, straightforward hockey that worked. So I liked his game, and I'm excited to actually see him play again, especially against a couple of teams in, you know, if he's able to play in both games, but especially against LA, like a team that can really get after you on the forecheck. Having Mancini's speed, I think, in the on the that bottom pair, I mean, I think it's essential.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that when you compare it to, you know, when the games where both Desharnais and Juulsen were in the lineup for the Canucks earlier in the season, right? The lack of mobility and a lack of ability to skate with the puck was so evident. And now,
right,
you know, to just have a different look you can put out there on the third line, somebody who gives you a different skill set is really important.
Yeah, and I, you know, one thing I'm curious about, Jamie, I'd like to get your thoughts on this, actually. I wonder if it makes sense for the Canucks to start playing Marcus Pettersson and Tyler Myers on different pairs. And I mean this not in terms of their best chance to beat LA, but just in terms of building out what this looks like down the stretch and into next season. You know, because when you look at this third pair, you look at the options, like, would Tocchet really be comfortable having Elias Pettersson and Mancini as a pair?
Probably not.
Right? Like, are we, right? Yeah. You know, it feels like if we're ever going to see this team with play Hughes, Hronek, Marcus Pettersson, and Myers in the lineup and have two younger defenders in it, right, we're going to need to see Marcus Pettersson play independent of Tyler Myers, right? Pettersson playing with Mancini, which is basically what we saw in Utah, and then Elias Pettersson playing with Myers, right? And the stakes for this go sort of beyond Mancini and Elias Pettersson, I think, because at some point, you know, probably this season, definitely next season, we're going to be talking about Tom Volander's role, mm-hmm. right? We're going to be talking about that. And, you know, when you think about Tom Volander, and I've been a little bit lower than market on this player, typically speaking, and I think that remains true. But don't you think the speed and the cleanliness with which Team USA broke out of their own end in that final game last season with, like, Sanderson and Brock Faber and company, you know, it did strike me that as I was watching that game and feeling like we're watching basically like the future of hockey on display in real time, you know, Tom Volander's skill set, that skating ability, the ability to get north in a hurry, beat forecheckers with his feet, right? A lot of that makes a ton of sense in terms of what he is as a player and what the Canucks are hoping for in terms of the value that he can provide. You know, he's not necessarily on a Jake Sanderson trajectory here, given that Sanderson was point per game plus in his, you know, D plus two season at the NCAA level. But, you know, I think like a Brock Faber is a high-end comp for Tom Volander. I mean, certainly that's in a realistic range of outcomes, and certainly what the Canucks have to be hoping for as they consider, you know, Tom Volander's hockey future here. And I do think it's notable, like, in Brock Faber's D plus two, right? Mm-hmm. In his D plus two season, you know, we are talking about a guy who only had 14 points in 32 games, right? Like, we are talking about a player who's, you know, from a statistical profile perspective, produced less, frankly, than Tom Volander has this season. So, you know, that's an exciting prospect, right? Canucks are going to need to get him blooded, get him minutes, get him a look at the NHL level. And given sort of his draft pedigree, the skill set, the speed, you know, I think there's a reasonable expectation that he should be able to hit the ground running as an NHL player. So at some point, I do think playing with Marcus Pettersson as he learns the game is going to be something we see a lot. And just in that context, I wonder about whether or not this club might want to start splitting sort of the veterans in their bottom four, the bottom end of their sort of blue line, just to get ready for sort of this, like, transitional educational phase that I think their blue line is going to enter probably by the end of this year.
Well, especially if Mancini is, like, demanding minutes. You know what I mean? And right. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's one game. We'll get another look tomorrow, it looks like. But because you're right, you're factoring in now, and DPD looks like he's going to come out of the lineup. That's fine. He's a young defenseman. He's still making his way and figuring out his role in the NHL. That happens. It's not a big deal to me. But you look ahead, you start looking ahead to next year, and, you know, certainly I think if all goes well for the players involved, you really want to have DPD and Volander in the lineup at the NHL level. And so then the question becomes, how do you manage having two young defensemen, essentially rookies? I mean, you know, we'll see what Elias Pettersson's eligibility and all that is, but basically two rookies in the lineup on the blue line going in to next year. I think the point about Volander next to Marcus Pettersson just makes a ton of sense as a spot for him to learn. And then I guess you also get into the question of how quickly can they build up trust with Rick Tocchet, where, like, could you be looking about, like, a year from now, like February 2026, Would the coaching staff be comfortable playing Tom Volander and Elias and DPD on a pair together, on a regular pair together in a game? Like, is that a reasonable goal? You know what I mean? Because you'd like to get to that point with both of them where it's not an obstacle to fleshing out your lineup and to building your lineup, right? It's not something you have to, like, puzzle around. They're just two guys that can go out there and play, but you got to lay the groundwork for that. And then there's also considerations, right, with like, how early can they take on penalty-killing duties? Because Quinn Hughes doesn't really do that, so you kind of really need the rest of your guys in the lineup to be able to do it. So there's a lot of questions around that. It's funny, because when you brought up, should Marcus Pettersson and Tyler Myers be split up and put on different pairs at some point here? I mean, I know you're always against it, but, like, I've been really impressed with what Philip Hronek has done with Quinn Hughes out of the lineup. Like, I'd love to see a Hronek-Marcus Pettersson second pair for this team. That would be very, very interesting to me. And I don't know if that means Tyler Myers goes up or if you, you know, rotate the other guys through. Like, is that a spot where Tom Volander gets some looks later on in the year when he's here or into next year next to Quinn Hughes? But that becomes a very interesting opportunity for me as well, given what Philip Hronek has done with Quinn Hughes out of the lineup.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I just think fundamentally, if you're going to create an environment where this team's actually likely to manufacture high quality looks and goals, the best chance of that happening, the closest approximation that the Canucks can manufacture to an elite top end for their lineup is creating 20 minutes a game, 5-on-5, where Hughes and Hronek are on the ice together. Like, right now, anyway, I just think that's too crucial for the Canucks to go about experimenting. But, you know, as these options begin to filter through, and if Tom Volander, for example, can get airdropped into the lineup and be an option, you know, honestly, like, as a 4-5 from day one, which I honestly think should be our reasonable expectation, given sort of his pedigree and accomplishments at the NCAA level and at the World Juniors. I mean, then we start to sort of hit an environment where I think the, you know, whether it's Adam Foote or Rick Tocchet or obviously both of them working together, this team will start to have some actually interesting options in terms of how they build it out. But certainly for this week anyway, as this team's in desperate need of goals, need of scoring chances, I want to see Hronek and I want to see Hughes and I want to see him play together.
Well, and put Hughes back in his comfort spot, right? When, like, not like Quinn Hughes is great wherever he plays, but, you know, he's missed some time here. Just throw him back with Philip Hronek. He likes doing it. I have no problem with that. I do think the addition of Marcus Pettersson, as you start to look beyond, you know, the immediate future here, creates some interesting possibilities again when you factor
good
in
point.
Elias Pettersson and Volander and all of that. And all of a sudden the complexion of the blue line starts to look a lot different than it did a few months ago. Now if they can just get that forward group figured out.
still some work to do. Hey, buddy, loved this Gorilla radio episode. It was actually a ton of fun to do, running around the rink, just sort of making it work, driving fast on the freeways to get here just a little bit late. Thanks for helping me out. Thanks for being flexible. Thanks for adjusting on the fly.
Yeah,
always
of course,
a blast to work with you, my friend.
Go finish up covering practice. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Stick taps to you, buddy. Taps to you.
All right. Thank you. That is Thomas Drantz. He's going to go talk to some of the Canucks players and probably Rick Tocchet as well as they wrap up their practice down in LA. So we'll see what quotes Drantzer can get out of the Canucks when he does his media availability rounds down there. We'll take a break in just a second here. As I mentioned, Adam Kierzenblatt from the Hockey News is going to join me on the other side. So talk to him about the lack of offense for the Vancouver Canucks. I know he wrote a piece recently about the Canucks potentially bringing Lekkomäki up and why it makes sense. So we'll get into that with Adam as well. Final segment next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. Drantzer has scurried off to finish covering Canucks practice down in LA. Talk to the players, talk to Rick Tocchet. We will see what they have to say about the lineup juggle and looking to get back in the win column with the back-to-back set down in Southern California this week, tomorrow against the Kings, Thursday against the Ducks. Live from the Kintech studio, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And now joining me, he covers the Canucks and the WHL for the hockey news. He is Adam Kierzenblatt. Adam, thanks for doing this today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And so, you know, we just have seen tweeted out, and we talked about it on our show as well, from Drantz, new lineup combinations for the Canucks. And probably the most notable thing here is Nils Höglander moving all the way up from the fourth line to play next to Elias Pettersson. Now, you know, we'll see how the ice time shakes out for that group. It's not as if Pettersson is playing like a bona fide number one like center or anything right now. But just kind of overall, what do you think of the lineup shuffle from Rick Tocchet on display today in LA?
Well, we know that Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander have some chemistry. This has been something that we've seen for the last couple of years. So it's interesting that it kind of took this long into the season to really see Höglander again get an opportunity. I know that, you know, Rick Tocchet talks about Höglander consistently throughout the year, you know, that he needs more, but sometimes you just need the right player. And while Höglander might not be a top six forward, you know, on most teams, if he can kind of unlock Pettersson, that is a big advantage for the Vancouver Canucks. And then I'm also kind of interested that you see some shuffling of, I guess, the second and third line. So you see the center switching over as well. So I'm very interested to see how they play that middle six situation moving over the next two games. And how the ice time kind of divvies up, not just on the power play and penalty kill, but at even strength.
Yeah, it's a good point about the ice time, right? And as I was saying to Drantz, it's not as if you have a clear-cut top six, bottom six situation even now, right? With Besser playing next to Pew Suter and, you know, Drew O'Connor, who can bring some secondary offense. You've got options for how you want to deploy your lines. None of them great necessarily, but I wouldn't be surprised to see kind of three lines with very, very even ice time in this game against the Kings tomorrow. I know you wrote recently, and I was talking about it in the show as well, about the case for the Canucks to call up Jonathan Lekkermäki. And I think, you know, we all know what he's doing at that level. Very, very consistent goal scoring. Looks really, really dangerous. We saw some flashes from him in his NHL appearances earlier this year. Make the case for us. Why is it the right time for the Canucks to bring up Lekkermäki right now?
Well, we look at just the Canucks' ability to generate offense, which has really disappeared over the last couple weeks. Now, when we look at the Canucks, you can talk about the last 10 games, the last 20 games, but you can really to look at how this team is doing, you have to look at the last six games. So that's when the trades happened and when the new players got into the lineup. So over the last six games, you have 11 goals for. You're 26.2 shots per game, 1.83 goals for per game. That's not good enough. I know that they're really strong defensively. That has to do with their structure and how Kevin Lankinen, Demko, and I guess Seelofs now are playing. But you need somebody who can generate some offensive chances and some at least shots on goal. So if we look at Lekkermäki, he, at the moment, of players who have played 10 games or more in the AHL, he ranks eighth overall in shots on goal per game at 3.57. Like, this is a player who has shown that he is able to generate shots, and it really should be a higher shots per game. He had a really slow January. He only had eight shots in five games in January, so that kind of brought down his shots per game. But through six games already this month, we're already seeing 3.67 shots per game. So When we talked to Rick Tocchet before the break, one of the things that he was saying is that you need to just kind of hit the net. So There's a lot of players who are just kind of aiming for, you know, whether it's top corner, right above the blocker, right below the blocker, like little areas. But in the end, if you just get pucks on net, that creates bounces, that creates rebounds. You never know what's going to happen. So there's a lot of hesitancy with this team, a lot of overpassing, and it might just be as simple as we need to just get everything we can towards the net to see what happens in order to kind of fix the offensive struggle this team has gone through.
Yeah, and with Lekkomäki, the thing that stands out to me is, I mean, one, you're just desperate for solutions right now, right? You're in a playoff race. You need to find a way to get more offense. So I think it's reasonable that it can help you now. But you also got to figure he's going to be a big part of this team next year, or certainly that would be the hope. And that's, you know, we can get into the Brock Besser discussion, but I think even if you re-sign Brock Besser going into next season, you still want Lekkomäki to force his way onto this NHL roster. So if you can, you know, both give your offense a little shot in the arm by bringing him up now and give him a chance to learn the ropes a little bit more at the NHL level, get, you know, give yourself a chance to gather some more information about what it looks like for him at the NHL level, It kind of can help you now and hopefully set the team up and set Lekkomäki up to have a successful next season as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about, is Lekkomäki ready for the NHL? You know, there are people who point to that he's not the biggest player in the world. Like he's about the same size as Connor Garland, but like in order to get that experience, you need to play games in the NHL. And right now is the perfect opportunity because there is pressure on this team at the moment. Right now, they're not in a playoff spot, but they're going to be fighting over the next 25 games for that playoff spot. So if you bring in Lekkomäki now, even if it's only for 5-10 games, and then you send it back down to the AHL just to kind of finish out that season, it also adds to that pressure. Like you can see how he performs in a pressure situation. And that also gives you kind of an idea of if he is ready for next season. Like at this point, yes, you need the wins, but if you're Rick Tocchet and you're this organization, you're looking for any type of spark at this point. And I know that they have some games against teams that are at the bottom end of the standings coming up, but they also have this Eastern road trip coming up. So I think that if you bring up Lekkomäki right now, it would be a good opportunity to see how he adjusts to pressure of not just maybe playing tougher opponents on the road, but also can he produce when your team needs him the most in order to qualify for a playoff spot?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of reasons why it's something the team should look at and consider going down the stretch run here. So I mentioned the Brock Besser decision, and I think certainly that's the biggest decision the team has to make, the most interesting and complex decision the team has to make here before the March 7th trade deadline next Friday. You know, we've heard that there's still a gap between the two parties, not a lot of traction in negotiations. It's been very noticeable and pointed, I think, from the team getting a lot of business done with other guys, with Marcus Pettersson and O'Connor and Kevin Lankinen, while Brock Besser remains unsigned. And I've kind of landed at the point, look, if you can get him done to a reasonable deal, there's a lot of reasons to like Brock Besser as a player. But given where the team is, I just think there's no way you can go past the deadline with him on the roster but unsigned. They have to make a decision one way or another here before March 7th. And I have no problem with them holding the line if they're, they don't want to go to 7 or 8 years. If that's a sticking point for Brock Besser, I think you got to bite the bullet and trade the player. How do you think they should be navigating the Brock Besser and pending unrestricted free agent status going into the trade deadline here?
Well, with Brock Besser, it obviously is a complicated situation because he's been with the organization for so long. So if you're continuing to evaluate a player who's been with the organization this long, that's not necessarily a great sign of his future with the team because, he's the longest serving player on this team. So how much more evaluation can you really do at this point? But when it comes to Besser and even a guy like Pugh Suter, who are unrestricted free agents at the end of the season, you can't have situations where you're losing players for nothing. Like this is you need to be able to recoup assets. I know that this organization wants to make the playoffs and they want to make a push for the playoffs, and Brock Besser would obviously be a big part of that. But if you don't intend to sign him and you're going to use him as kind of your own rental, like that's missed opportunity to kind of build for the future or even bring in a player that could help you in the playoff run. Like we saw this with the trades that they've made. You know, they're trying to build kind of a different team than they've had in the past, like a more defensive team, a team that has some, I guess, more speed. And does Besser kind of fit into that? Yes, he can score, close to 30 goals a game, but is the team going to use him properly in the future? And does he fit kind of the mold that this team is? Like, he's shown that he can play with Drew O'Connor, which is great. Like, he's shown that he can play with Filip Hedl, which is great, but you need to make it, like, with Besser, we're at the point where if you don't want to sign him, you have to try to recoup those assets. And while you can trade his rights at the deadline or at the draft, you're not going to get much. So at this point, it's kind of, you need to make that decision before March 7th. And if you are not going to move him, try to at least find somebody or multiple pieces that are going to come in that might help you, not just this year, but in the future.
Yeah, and that point about, you know, what style of team are they trying to build and how does that figure into the Besser decision? I think it's a really interesting one. You know, we all know Jim Rutherford loves wingers with speed. We've seen it throughout his career. And you look at, like, even Filippito coming into the lineup and just how noticeable his ability to rush the puck through the neutral zone is, make plays at speed. And I'm not saying, well, you can't sign Brock Besser because he's not the fastest player. We all know that. He can still be a really effective player despite not being that fast. But I just wonder if this organization wants to commit the term and money it will take to keep him to a player that doesn't have some of that playmaking and puck-carrying ability. Or, like, because we see how much they desperately need it, right? And I wonder if they would rather commit that money on the UFA market to someone who maybe they're not even quite as good as Brock Besser, but if they can do more of that, does that fit the mold and the identity that they're trying to build here?
Yeah, there's a ton. There's going to be a good amount of wingers and even centers who do have that speed element who are going to be available on the market. And also because the cap is going to go up, the Canucks will have some space. But if you decide not to re-sign Besser, you can also use some of that money. You can allocate it to bringing in wingers. But, like, we know who Besser is. We know what type of player he is. He's one of the top goal scorers in franchise history for a reason. Like, this is a guy who's given his heart and soul to this team. But when you're looking at how teams evolve, like, there is a conversation that needs to have. Is this player going to fit our mold moving forward? Is this player going to fit in with kind of the players that we're going to be bringing in the future? And like you said, is this player going to fit, or is this player going to bringing value in 7-8 years if they do sign him to a long-term contract? So yeah, it's very complicated when it comes to Brock Besser. I know that there's a lot of people in the fan base who would be very upset if they did trade him, because he is one of the most loved Canuck players in the organization. But if you are going to build your team with speedy wingers, and you are going to build your team kind of as a team that likes to get in on the forecheck and force those turnovers, it might not make sense to sign Besser long-term because he doesn't 100% fit that mold.
In conversation with Adam Kierzenblatt from the Hockey News, he covers the Canucks and the WHL here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And I wanted to talk just a little bit about the new look blue line for the Canucks as well. You know, part of the reason they're kind of in this offensive struggle now is, like, you trade JT Miller, you get Marcus Pettersson out of it, and that really helps solidify your blue line. But also, all of a sudden, you have defenseman Elias Pettersson, who's come up and looked really good in his first NHL stint, and Victor Mancini gets in to make his Canucks debut against Utah, and I thought he had a pretty solid showing. So now all of a sudden you've got a lot more credible options to use, and I find it interesting because you've got a couple of young guys, and we'll see, maybe Tom Volander will be here at some point as well. You know, you want to make sure you're getting Mancini opportunities, Elias Pettersson regular opportunities. You're also trying to win games and stay in the playoff race. How would you like to see Rick Tocchet and his coaching staff manage the blue line and all of these different options they have for the rest of the season?
Well, I think we also have to wait and see what this team looks like with Quinn Hughes. Like, that is
sure. The
most important thing, because we haven't seen how this new look team is with Quinn Hughes, and that's going to change a lot of the dynamics, not just in the defensive zone, but also the offensive zone when he's here. But I like this idea where you kind of are rotating in some of the younger guys. So maybe you don't play Pettersson and Mancini at the same time, but you have kind of like a rotation. I'd also like to see if Mancini can play with, you know, some minutes with Quinn Hughes. I know that, you know, that's Hronek's spot at the moment with Quinn Hughes. But just based off of what we've seen, I know it's only been one game, but even in the AHL and everything that we've heard about him, like, he has the speed, he has the skating to kind of keep up with Quinn Hughes. It's more of, does he have the defensive metrics at this point or the defensive skill to keep up with playing beside Hughes? But I'd love to see if that's an option. We'll see what happens with Carson Soucy as well. That's a big question mark that kind of hangs over this organization. He's not playing at the moment. And while there were rumors that he's on the trade block, we know in Vegas, as Drant said earlier today, like, this was kind of a performance-based thing. But I'd love to see them kind of mix and match down the road here, especially when you're playing kind of the lower teams in the standings. Like, you don't have to necessarily, like if you're playing San Jose, you don't necessarily have to play Hughes and Hronek together. You can maybe play Hughes and Mancini together, give Hronek maybe Elias Pettersson, something like that. You can mix and match when you're playing those different teams to see if there is some chemistry. And then if you need to, you can always just bulk up that top four when you're playing the higher end teams like the Winnipegs that are coming up. So I'd love to see some experimentation on the back end and kind of see if they can find a mix, because at this point you need, while Hughes and Hronek have been phenomenal together, you kind of need them on different pairs at this point because of how the Marcus Pettersson, Tyler Myers, like they've been good together, but there are also some question marks there. We're kind of seeing a little bit of concerning trends over the last two games. Now there was the break, but we'll see if they can kind of bounce back. But I'd love to see some changes around and just seeing if different players can work well in different situations.
All right, Adam, I mentioned that you covered the WHL for the Hockey News as well, and I'm like one of the founding members of the Gavin McKenna Hype Club, so I got to take this opportunity. I see he's on like this like 33 plus game point streak. He's got 106 points in 51 games. I mean, it's outrageous what he's doing at this level for a kid who's not even in his draft year yet.
Well, yeah, McKenna is just a different beast all around. Like I watched some of his games when they were playing in the U.S. division, and he just tore up like some of the best U.S. team. Like Everett and Spokane are juggernauts in this league, and he just tore them up. You know, I know that when you look at point totals, they're a little bit skewed because back in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, there were players who were getting ridiculous amounts. But this could be one of the best seasons that we've seen from somebody McKenna's age in WHL history, just based off of where the league is at right now. Now, Medicine Hat is a contender where we're going to see kind of where Caden Lidstrom, like he hasn't played this season, and that's a massive part. So if Lidstrom can come back and kind of connect with McKenna, that's going to be massive for him point production wise. But as of right now, Medicine Hat is one of the favorites to go to the Memorial Cup. And he's just another line in these Western Canadian kids that we're going to see go first overall. You know, we had Bedard, we had Macklin Celebrini. Now we have McKenna, and we're going to have Landon DuPont as well. So it's been a lot of fun to watch McKenna not just grow kind of as a player, but as kind of like a brand, because we can see kind of how the WHL is marketing him as well. Earlier today, they announced that they're going to play two games in his hometown during the preseason in Whitehorse, and they're going to bring up the Kelowna Rockets and Medicine Hat. So you can see definitely how the league is using every opportunity they can to market McKenna, and it's going to be very interesting to see what he does for an encore next season, because like this is a kid who, once he gets drafted, he's going to the NHL. Like, yes. I don't think there's many doubts that that's going to happen, but you know, how is he going to look next year? Can he eclipse that 150 mark? And also, what is he going to look like for Team Canada at the World Juniors next season?
Yeah, that's a great point. Oh, my goodness. Oh, now, I do have to, you mentioned they're scheduling the games up in Yukon for Medicine Hat. Like, does your gut say that his encore is going to be in the WHL? Because I know with the new universe we're in with the NCAA agreement and lack of regulations now for the NCAA, I know there's been some speculation. I don't know if you have any reporting or anything on that, but what does your gut tell you about where Gavin McKenna plays his hockey next year?
So when I see something like this where the WHL is making an effort to go to McKenna's hometown or home territory, like that tells me that there's an indication that he's coming back next season. I don't have any information on if he's coming back or not. I just know that right now he's a Medicine Hat Tiger. He hasn't committed to any NCAA teams, but we're seeing a lot of players come and commit to NCAA teams, but those are more the older players. So I am very curious to see how this NCAA situation plays out, if players are going to kind of leave before their draft season, or if this is a opportunity where you can play up to your draft year, get drafted, and then move to the NCAA. I think it's more, we're going to see more of that second option where players use the WHL to develop before they get drafted. And then once they get drafted, then they can go on to the NCAA because they'll be a little bit older as well. But I have a hard time believing that the WHL would make this commitment, which is massive because
yes.
you're sending two teams up to the Yukon for preseason games. I have a hard time thinking that they would make that commitment if they didn't have a good idea that McKenna was coming back with the Medicine Hat Tigers next season.
It's going to be a blast to watch. Man, it's been wild to watch his development in the WHL so far, and crazy to think that he still has one more year left to top what he's doing this year. Adam, thanks so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
That is Adam Kjerzenblatt covering the Canucks for the Hockey News and also covers the WHL. And you know I had to get my Gavin McKenna check-in in whenever we have a WHL knower on the show. We got to make sure we get the Gavin McKenna update. And you know one of the best things about having Best on Best Hockey back is I can now really project years into the future. And I'm already thinking the 2030 Olympics. The Gavin McKenna, Macklin Celebrini, Connor Bedard line. Boy, that's going to hit hard. That is going to be outrageous. I just looked it up. Apparently, the 2030 Winter Olympics are just, they're just calling it the French Alps. Not a specific city or anything, just the mountains. The French Alps. That's where they're having the 2030 Olympics. I don't know why we couldn't nail it down to a specific city or a ski village or something in there, but the French Alps. They should have like an awesome outdoor rink in the mountains for the hockey if they're going to go just lean into the alpine thing.
This just kind of feels like Mario Kart when they can't use the name of the city, but they just like the French Alps. We can't say France, but it's the French Alps.
It's the French Alps. That's apparently where we all have to say who's going to go to Team Canada to the French Alps in 2030. We'll probably just say France. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in here. Just a couple of minutes left in the show. Try to get in to a couple of them. And I was going to do a Elias Pettersson trade proposal. I don't want to get into that. 90 seconds left. We can't go down that road here, guys. We're almost out of the show. So I'll just read this one. Lance Victoria says, what happened to the Josh Norris from the Sens talk? He's Quinn Hughes' best friend, top six center. I always loved the idea. I just never really got it from the Ottawa Senators' perspective. And especially now, they're playing really well. Like, I get it. Oh, he's injury prone. He signed to this big deal. Like, do we want to commit? But they're trying to make the playoffs. They're trying to do something in the playoffs. They're playing really, really well for the first time in a long time. I never really quite understood what the motivation for the Ottawa Senators would be to move on from Josh Norris. If he's available... Yeah, that's extremely interesting. A very, very interesting player for the Canucks to target. I know his name has been out there in the past. The puzzle pieces have just never really clicked together for me when I've seen that one. And I mean, if we're talking pre-deadline, I don't think it makes sense. You never know what happens into the summer, I guess. But I never got the Josh Norris stuff from the Ottawa Senators' perspective. Okay, we will wrap things up there. Thank you to everyone for texting in and being part of the show. We'll see what else comes out of Canucks practice today. And, of course, it is a crossover Wednesday tomorrow. Jason Buchla will join us as well. We expect Dranser back on the show, too, on a Canucks game day. That's what's coming up tomorrow here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Running around the rink, just sort of making it work, driving fast on the freeways.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.